This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Mike Shope.
I have these notes, but I gotta say, I'm just fired up to be here today.
And the Bulldog.
Pretty cool! Pretty damn cool!
Woo! On WGR.
Come on! Get up! Come on, get up! If you're as psyched as I am!
Sports Radio 550.
That is not me in that clip, by the way. Some have wondered. Many have asked.
No, it's Bulldog, actually.
That's right. When there was a plate of cucumbers out in the bistro, his favorite food. He got very, very amped up for the cucumbers. Sliced just right. Just so. Happy Friday, everybody. I'm Mike Shope. Very pleased to welcome Ian Harditz back to the show. It's been a while. I've done his show once. He was on maybe last year with us, but this guy has all the bases covered. We're going to talk fantasy, NFL draft, and about the NFL in general. Ian, welcome back. How are you these days?
Good to talk to you again, man. Yeah, you came on the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast back in February to preview the Bills' upcoming season, and man, you had me on the bold offseason take about Curtis Samuel taking his talents there. I was all in. Unfortunately, I think he priced himself out just a bit too much, so good for Curtis on getting that cash, but you know what? We'll take Emmanuel Sanders. I'm sure Josh Allen and company will be just fine next year, but yeah, man, a lot of things going on in the NFL world. Excited to be back.
I thought about you and that conversation as soon as I heard that they had signed Sanders, because like there went that idea. But Samuel is, if you have Samuel in Dynasty, say, Ian, that's a pretty good result, I think.
I mean, you look at what he's done, and he's still only 24 years old, and I know we kind of float out these ages for certain guys, you know, Amari Cooper, Sam Darnold, and it gets old, and you're just like, okay, I don't care how young they are. I want this guy to produce at some point. But in Curtis Samuel's defense, man, he comes in the league in 2017, really is banged up that entire year, only played 9 games. And since then, he's only really gotten to play with an injured version of Cam Newton, Kyle Allen, Teddy Bridgewater, and just what he's been able to do in that spare time as both a wide receiver and a running back has really shown off that versatility. So when you have these kind of gadget players, or you know, these kind of tweener types, we've been talking about Kyle Pitts in the draft, someone that maybe doesn't have as defined of a position as someone else, you get nervous about how they might do transitioning to a different offense. But in Curtis's case, man, going to Washington, having Scott Turner there as the OC that was his offensive coordinator during some of his more productive times with the Panthers, I do think it's a great fit. And giving Terry McLaurin someone to take the attention off, you know, we'll see if Ryan Fitzpatrick can keep playing at the top of his capabilities. I feel like at some point the clock kind of has to hit midnight on everything Fitzpatrick has been doing over the past 2 years. But at a minimum, I think this Washington passing game could be quite a bit more entertaining than we've gotten used to in recent years.
Yeah, for sure. And by the way, to your point about players' ages, the one lately that I've been stuck on is that Ezekiel Elliott is 25, not like 29 or something like that. He's still only 25. He'll be 26 in July, I think, Elliott. All right, Ian. So
man, I almost feel, yes, go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say, like, to get to the draft here, you know, as a dynasty player myself, and Joe is as well, who is with me today, like, it's just so exciting to think about all the possibilities with skill position players in this draft. Right from the top, pick 3, there's intrigue. Pick 4, of course, with Atlanta. I just kind of want it to be over now because I can't do anything yet. No, nobody wants to do anything with me yet because there's so much information still yet to be figured out. So these 2 weeks are going to drag.
Yeah, and look, the landing spots for all these guys are so important. And that is just what I would kind of caution everyone, because we've seen, you know, the guys like Justice Hill, you know, Benjamin, Darwin Thompson, like, we just fall in love with these prospects. And then even when they wind up in situations where we realize they're really not going to get the touches we're hoping for, we kind of stick to our pre-draft, you know, guns just a little bit too much. So don't get me wrong, it's great to know as much about these prospects as possible. Just realize, people, particularly in fantasy football, you know, if your guy is not getting drafted in the top three rounds, we are, you know, looking at a tough future potential, at least in that first year. I mean, truly, man, since 2010, rookie running backs not drafted inside the top three rounds to finish just at the top 24 back, not even top 12, just top 24, RB2 land, Roy Helu, Zach Stacy, Jordan Howard, Alfred Morris, Philip Lindsay, and James Robinson most recently. So only six guys over a 10-year period, man. And, hey, maybe talent slides or something and they land in that perfect spot like, you know, some of these guys have in the past. But to me, you know, just be careful with some of these players, because when we have these 3 months, you know, from January to April every single year, even 4 months, whatever, but when you have that much time to kind of go over the same group of rookies, you know, not having any extra football actually being played, I do think we tend to overhype these guys when NFL teams don't like them quite as much as we do.
Yeah, and, you know, landing spot, of course, is massively important. It's interesting how last year went. I mean, you mentioned Robinson. That's quite an anomaly with what happened there. But Edwards-Hilaire, he was nobody's number one running back in fantasy until the draft, and then he was everybody's. And so he goes to the top of the list. That did not go very well, relatively speaking. And you had Taylor and Swift and the guys in the second round, even Dobbins. I mean, production from all of them. So I don't know, did we overreact last year to this?
I think on the Clyde news, I mean, it was a pretty hectic start to the season. Actually, we had the Alvin Kamara back issue popping up when he was kind of going out there looking for a new contract. I mean, there was a point where I think CEH was even getting floated as the RB4. I think it really got out of control after Damian Williams opted out of the season with COVID, and you kind of looked at the Chiefs depth chart and was like, well, who else are they going to give the ball to? So, you know, the Clyde expectations probably got a little bit too out of control for an offense that we knew was going to go through Tyreek and Kelce at the end of the day. But with that said, man, I think the five teams right now that really could foster the most productive rookie running back, at least in 2021, the Falcons, the Jets, the Steelers, the Dolphins, and Jaguars. The last two, not quite as much. I don't hate James Robinson or Myles Gaskin, but let's face it, there's not a bunch of draft capital or resources from either of those organizations behind those guys, particularly with the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm just not convinced that Urban Meyer and Daryl Bevell signed up to really give Robinson that same workhorse role that he had in 2020. So the Falcons, Jets, and Steelers, those are the three teams to me where if, you know, Najee, Etienne, Williams, you know, whoever your cup of tea is at the running back position, if we see them going the Falcons, Jets, or Steelers, we are loving it. I know the Cardinals were a team that people were looking at as well, but I think with them signing James Conner and, more importantly, only having two selections in the first two rounds of the draft, I just think they have more pressing needs elsewhere than, you know, throwing that running back position. That I think we overterm, you know, running backs don't matter. I know my company PFF loves to say that. I think the only reason there is some truth behind that is because, you know, just in the salary cap system, if you had to rank every single position and say, okay, where can we best get away with, you know, spending less resources, you will find that running back is that spot in terms of devoting later round picks to the unit. But, you know, in fantasy year one, typically draft capital and money does tend to talk in terms of getting that opportunity.
Ian Harditz of PFF here on WGR. I'm Mike Shope, and Bulldog is off today. So the quarterbacks are the name of the game at the top of the draft, of course, and the big drama is around San Francisco. How have you sort of interpreted what you've heard about what they do there? And then, Ian, in a fantasy sense or context, I feel like it's really important what they do, because I think fantasy is ready to love Justin Fields in San Francisco and maybe not Mac Jones. I mean, there's a big disparity in how those two players are viewed.
Yeah, man, I've gone back and forth on it a little bit in recent days because, look, guys like Daniel Jeremiah and Adam Schefter that have far more, you know, plugs into the NFL world than I do, when they're saying that Mac Jones, the 49ers, is a realistic thing, and we do know after Kyle Shanahan signed his latest contract extension with him having final say in that 49ers, you know, draft room, I do think the Mac Jones murmurs do make sense. But then we see yesterday with DraftKings Sportsbook, Fields taking the lead again. So, you know, gun to my head, I would go with Justin Fields. I just don't know why they would trade up to three to get someone, Mac Jones, that we I mean, even if you are, you know, more of a Mac Jones apologist than the next guy and you think you can have a bright future, just from a raw physical tool standpoint, I mean, why would you trade up all the way to 3 to get this guy when you could likely get him a couple picks down? So just from that point of view, I do think it's Fields. And, man, the situation, maybe in 2021 it's not ideal because the 49ers do keep on, you know, pounding the Jimmy G door. If he is healthy, I think he's good enough not to get benched for Fields immediately. But, man, oh, man, like the one constant we've seen from rookie QB1 since 2010, and we've had seven of them, Cam Newton, Kyler, Dak, RG3, Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, and Justin Herbert. All those guys except for Herbert started in week 1, and they averaged at least 25 rushing yards per game in college. I mean, look, we saw the Justin Fields 4.44 at his pro day, but he was doing this, I mean, all the time at Ohio State. I mean, we get worried when a pro day doesn't match what we saw from the guy on film, but, you know, whether it's him running down Trey Sermon at Michigan State from, like, 60 yards behind, whether it's him, you know, just against Clemson, looking like one of the better athletes on the field before he took that nasty hit in the back. I mean, we have seen Fields function as a fantasy-friendly dual threat talent. So for me, you know, looking at him really throughout this draft process, the three teams that I kind of looked at where I said, okay, if Fields gets drafted by them, I'm comfortable really treating him as a superior quarterback to Lawrence. In the fantasy world, at least in 2021, it'd be San Francisco, Carolina, and Denver. So for me, those are the top three teams where if it Fields, you know, Lance, whoever else, if they can get on one of those squads, and you got playmakers all over the place, and I'm also, you know, liking the chances of them getting on the field sooner rather than later.
Okay, so if Denver, that makes sense. I mean, with their receiver crop is great.
Yeah.
If those teams, those three teams you listed, drafted, one of them drafted Justin Fields, you'd put him at, like, in a super flex, he'd be 101 over Lawrence for you?
Yeah, I feel good enough about that. I mean, with Lawrence, he has similar tools. I mean, I brought up the 25 rushing yards per game.
Yep.
He's not Justin Fields as a rusher, but look, man, I saw him go 60 yards against my Ohio State Buckeyes in that game 2 years ago. That dude can run just fine himself. I just think in a fantasy term, Justin Fields is going to rely on his legs a little bit more. And it's just a cheat code in fantasy football. Look no further than Jalen Hurts being like the QB9 right now in average draft position to show you that you don't need to be a great real-life quarterback to be thought of very highly in the fantasy world. So, yeah, I mean, San Francisco under tutelage with Kyle Shanahan, Denver where you're getting Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, who I know some people are off of after last year. I am not at all. I think he's going to be very special and still has great years ahead. Noah Fant, Albert O, KJ Hamler, and obviously with the Panthers, even with Sam Darnold there. If we do get one of these mini Justin Fields slides, which I do think is unlikely, but hey, scoop him up. You still got DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, and some good schemers in there with Joe Brady as well. So, yeah, I think Denver, Carolina, and San Francisco, top three landing spots for any incoming rookie QB.
Okay, so let's substitute Lance for Fields and have the same conversation. If it's Lance in, I don't know, Denver maybe is the one I'll start with because they're lower. I'm saying that's the likeliest landing spot for him. Like maybe Atlanta is, and he would be a backup right away, which is a whole different thing. How close to Fields is Lance?
So looking at these guys, I had an article go up on PFF.com a couple weeks ago where I was looking at just the incoming rookie QBs and who offered the most fantasy-friendly rushing upside. From a pure athlete perspective, Justin Fields, I think, is just bigger, faster, stronger than Trey Lance. Like, if you just wanted to, you know, have these guys to see who's kind of better athlete, I think you'd say Justin Fields. But Trey Lance, the things he does run the football, man, our PFF comp for him, which you can find in our 2021 draft guide, is Taysom Hill with actual arm talent. And if you saw Taysom Hill play last season, you might have been disgusted at, you know, the triple crow hops to try to underthrow a ball 40 yards downfield. But you also saw him running around making a lot of plays because, when quarterbacks run, I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but when quarterbacks run, it's just a cheat code in fantasy football. So Trey Lance averaging 73 yards per game in his final two seasons at North Dakota State. Man, we only saw him one time this year. It was 15 carries, 143 yards in a pair of scores. I understand the competition is going to be far different. He's not going to have as much success, but truly, he just has more of that run-first mentality that we don't see elsewhere with the other quarterbacks. Similar to Jalen Hurts. Like, if Trey Lance is under center, I'm confident we're going to see double-digit rush attempts from day one. So I think he's much more raw than Fields. It's going to be harder for him to land that starting spot. Washington's kind of been floated around as that popular trade-up candidate, or maybe if he slips, you know, he ends up there. So, 2022 and beyond, it's more of a conversation. But just in 2021, I think Lance is going to have a hard time really catching on anywhere other than Denver. Because let's face it, man, even if I am a little bit more of a Drew Lock apologist than the next guy, just because in between all those awful plays, he does put some pretty good throws on film from time to time. Let's face it, Denver, that's the single easiest job for an incoming rookie QB to take over, and they would have those aforementioned weapons to throw to as well.
Ian Harditz of PFF. Ian, Kyle Pitts. So where do we want him? And is there a scenario where, like, in a one-quarterback league, you could take him first overall in a rookie draft?
If you're in tight end premium, I think it's warranted, man, because look at the top tight ends that have pretty much taken over fantasy football. It's Travis Kelce, Darren Waller, and George Kittle. And yes, they're tight ends, but, you know, these guys are number one receivers in their offense. And we can talk Kelce versus Tyreek. They're both getting 130-plus targets per year. The Chiefs happen to be blessed enough to have two number one receivers in their offense. But, you know, you go back to, like, Jimmy Graham in 2013-14, the whole franchise tag debacle. He wanted to be called a wide receiver so he can make more money than the tight ends. Like, it's just one of those things where I think Pitts is, like, just being kind of thrown into this tight end class when who cares? He's a number one receiver. That's why he's being talked about in the top 10. And I think that, you know, when we're comparing him to past tight ends, he's a unicorn. His coach has been saying that. He's been saying that. He is just such a unique receiver. And I think too much is being paid to just his positional designation. So as we've seen basketball become a little bit more of a, like, a positionless sport in recent years, football is getting that way as well. So 10 years ago, I'd be a little more concerned about Pitts coming out. You know, hey, maybe it could still happen, man. Maybe the New York Giants draft him and Jason Garrett just doesn't think he's blocking well enough as an end line player, and they decide to put him down there. But man, when you hear everything coming out with this guy, you know, it seems like if he escapes the top 10 picks, that would be a surprise. I just don't think you make that sort of just selection with a player and you don't have a great plan for him. So with Pitts, man, he's too big for safeties. Too big for cornerbacks to deal with. He's too fast for safeties or linebackers. And then you just look at him with the catch point. He just seems like he's too damn good for pretty much anyone to guard. So Kyle Pitts, I'm in on him. I think, you know, you're not exactly getting him anywhere close to a value in most best ball drafts I've seen. He's already kind of going tight end six, tight end seven. But, man, the ceiling is there based on what we've seen from him in his last 2 years really at Florida. So, hey, we've only seen Evan Engram and Rob Gronkowski function as a rookie tight end ones, top 12 at their position since 2010. But Pitts, man, if you can get on the Dolphins, Falcons, maybe even Jerry Jones gets his wet dream and he goes to the Cowboys, I think Pitts could be number three on that list.
I have a tough time finding a perfect team, though. From, like, there's just a little bit of a hitch with each of those, whether it's Gesicki in Miami. Atlanta doesn't feel right to me with what they have already and the way the coaches coached before Arthur Smith. Cincinnati, I think, works, but I think I'm putting them on Ja'Marr Chase. So, and Detroit has Hockenson. Like, I don't know where I want them, Pitts.
No, that's a fair point. I would say with the Dolphins, I mean, Mike Gesicki is a glorified slot receiver. Last season alone, I mean, he spent three times the amount of snaps as he did in the slot. He spent three times the amount of snaps he did in line as he did in the slot. So I think he really could just kind of use Gesicki and Pitts kind of as tight end slot hybrids and keep them on the field at the same time with Devontae Parker and Will Fuller. So I see what you're saying. And, you know, it is tricky to always assume rational coaching in the NFL. Yep. Maybe he does go to Detroit and we see Hockenson, you know, playing far over him in the beginning. So that's why, you know, I'm not actively shooting for him, expecting greatness in 2021, just because we could see a situation where, you know, he's already being priced at tight end six. You know, it's hard for him to go too much up on that. I'd rather take someone priced a little bit closer to their floor. But I just think the overwhelming talent there for someone that I believe he's still only 21 years old, he sure looks a lot like the league's next great tight end.
Right. Ian, a few more minutes here. How about Ja'Marr Chase? Like, is he, for you, the easy number one receiver, or is it close?
Yeah, to me, he's the easy number one. And, you know, all the credit in the world to Justin Jefferson, but Ja'Marr Chase was the number one receiver on that LSU team. So I just can't really get past that, man, because as great as Waddle, Devontae Smith, you know, we even got Chase's other teammate, Terrence
Marshall,
getting a lot of steam. Yeah, Terrence Marshall getting a lot of steam as well. I just think Chase, man, that dominance you showed in 2019, not just dominance, but against number one corners week in and week out against Alabama, against Clemson down the stretch as well. I mean, it was just one dominant display after another. So for me, Ja'Marr Chase, he is that, you know, I don't like using the word generational, but man, he sure looks like one of the best wide receiver prospects of at least the last 5 years. I know he doesn't have the most overwhelming size, you know, not doesn't have that 4.3 speed, but man, it's just one of those things where with the production, he passes it. With the eye test, he passes it. And the chance to pair him with the very same quarterback that gave him all that success, I think it's too much of an opportunity for the Bengals to pass up that high in the draft. I know they need to continue to address the offensive line, but to their credit, they have used two of their last three first-round picks on the offensive line. I think there's an argument to be made that getting, you know, a potential perennial number one receiver like Ja'Marr Chase could be more important at this stage in the NFL than really adding another tackle to your offensive line. And, you know, no disrespect to Penei Sewell. Maybe he is going to be one of the better left tackles the league has seen in quite some time. But to me, Ja'Marr Chase just has that higher upside factor, and I would rather try to enhance Joe Burrow as much as possible as soon as possible.
I like it. Ian, last thing, the Bills. So they're picking 30th. Maybe it's right to think it'll be defense or a lineman. They're not really – probably anyway in the skill position game this year. They could be round two, at least they could be more likely. What do you like for them, and what would a certain move, say it's a running back, right? I mean, they didn't run the ball well, so say they do that in even the second round, where would that leave you with who the guys they have? I mean, it seems like that might be over for the guys they have if they were to do that.
Yeah, I hope they don't take a running back, man. It's not, and I don't even know that Moss or Singletary are even all that great. It's just the way that Josh Allen plays football. It doesn't help his running backs at all. Josh has been one of the most productive scorers on rushing touchdowns since he entered the league. He's literally one of only a handful of guys with 20-plus rushing touchdowns since 2018. And also, as we've seen with Josh, you know, he's going to chuck that ball downfield. He's not going to check it down as much. So with the committee already in place, like, it's already been brutal enough with the two RB system they've been deploying. If we add a third player to that equation, that's going to be especially problematic, man. So I would say someone like Kenny Gainwell, I'd be really excited to see them get. Just give me someone that can add to the receiving juice, because as we've seen with the Bills, really over, you know, as long as Brian DeBoer is going to still be calling plays and everything, this is a pass-first offense. So let's keep getting Josh Allen more receivers. I like the Emmanuel Sanders signing to just, you know, help replace John Brown. I thought Gabriel Davis was qualified enough to do that anyway, but whatever, man. It's more weapons for Josh Allen. You're about to have to pay him a boatload of money. Let's get him another receiver. So Kenneth Gainwell, if you're going to address the skill position units, if there was a second tight end, you know, maybe we could look that way. Mm-hmm. But to be fair, I think Dawson Knox has flashed enough to warrant maybe another year seeing what he can do. So I know he needs to be more consistent, had a bunch of problems with the drops as a rookie. But as we know, man, a tight end could be one of those positions where it's pretty hard to master as a young player. You got to be a phenomenal blocker and receiver at the same time. And the fact that Knox has shown the ability to make some circus catches, and I mean, some of the yak. I mean, I forget the Bengals defender he stiff-armed as a rookie, but that dude still might be spending. Some of the big plays Knox has made makes me believe that, you know, he's not someone I want to give up on just yet. So I would say, you know, give me a receiving running back, someone that can maybe line up in the slot from time to time as well, if you're going to address, you know, the skill position units. Otherwise, yeah, let's just build up that defense, build up the offensive line, because as we saw last year, again, clearly not too much is wrong with this Bills offense at the moment.
Great job, Ian. It's cool to talk to you again. Thanks for coming on today.
Absolutely, man. Enjoy April, and then we got the true offseason on the way.
Yes. If you're up for a breather, there's one coming. All right. Thanks, Ian. Ian Harditz from PFF on Twitter. His Twitter feed, Joe, I think you agree, is really fun and cool. Like he's smart and funny, and he uses
the memes,
clips well.
The GIFs, the videos.
The memes and the GIFs. IHARTITZ, Ian Harditz from PFF. Thanks to him. We will do some baseball next. Ben Wagner coming up from the Jays. We'll talk about their start. Their game is postponed already for tonight. A few games already. I've seen three. The Mets in Colorado, the Red Sox at home, snow, and Kansas City at home to Toronto, all already postponed. Some baseball next. Sal at 5, talking NFL. I got to say it right here, because I almost forgot. Joe, somebody tweeted at me, I didn't know that the Peter King is reporting they're not doing a doubleheader week one, Monday Night Football.
Oh, okay, that's right.
Week 18.
Saw reference to that.
So one game on Monday night. That makes predicting the schedule a little bit less fun.
Denver's out.
Denver is out. I agree. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. This is WGR.